Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 414 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyra, your co-host as usual, along with my good friend and pal out on the West Coast, Sam Malai. How's it going in Southern California?
Amazing, sunny, feeling good, good energy. Let's have a great episode today for our listeners.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this one. This is something both of us near and dear to our hearts.
Yeah, which is virtual assistants. One of the highest ROI things you can do for your law firm is having a good staff, especially staff that is seasoned, that cares, and people that are dedicated to your law firm to help you grow your law firm. Neil, do you have any virtual assistants? What's your experience with virtual assistants?
Well, I'm a perfect example. I will tell you that I added virtual assistants to my practice based on your advice when I first met you. And I think that you were one of the pioneers of advocating for the use of VAs as a way to scale up your practice. And, you know, the timing was right for me. It was just pre-COVID. And, you know, my practice was starting to return the kind of income that I wanted, but I was working, you know, 60, 70 hours a week to make that happen. And I needed to bring somebody in to help me transition and scale it to something more manageable. And so that's exactly what we did.
That's great. So what I'm about to share with everybody is based on 9 years. Actually, Upwork has a little, whenever you put up a job post on the right side, you could see your entire lifetime stats of your Upwork and pretty much your history of hiring VAs. And I always love seeing this stats. So let me share this stat. So I opened my Upwork account in October 2015. So it's been almost 9 years. 363 hires. So over 360 VAs that we hired. $1.8 million spent on virtual assistants. 234 job posts. Average hourly rate, this is pretty cool, $5.61 average hourly rate across all these VAs. And I think the coolest number is 309,000 hours that's been worked through my Upwork account. And Neil, I'm going to do some quick math. 309,000 times, let's just say very conservative to say these workers bring in $20 of value, at least if not more, maybe let's just do very $20. That's $6,180,000 of value through by having virtual assistants from my law firms. And the value, again, the cost of it is much less than that. Actually, no, you know what? Let me do it. So $6.2 million.
Real-time key performance indicator analysis here.
Yeah. So 6.2 based on $20, very conservative $20 value. By the way, it's a lot more. Yeah. It's probably towards $80, $90 an hour, but let's just say $20. And the $5.61 of the cost times the 309. So the cost of it for me up to this point is the 1.7, 1.8. So the ROI is minimum on a conservative 1 to 3.5. So 350% ROI on a very conservative. And most likely it's way, way, way more than that.
Yeah.
So very powerful, very valuable. But on today's episode, let's talk about 5 secrets and how you can leverage these secrets for you to also have a really good ROI with virtual assistants.
Yeah, sure.
Number one, secret number one is the virtual assistants offers you specialized work, and specialists always outperform generalists. Neil, what are your thoughts about this?
Yeah, I think that's true. I think you have to go in with the mindset of understanding that when you're going to hire a virtual assistant to do a specific task or an area of work, you're going to be much more successful if you focus in on that. So if you want a VA to help you develop graphics for your social media channels, for instance, just because you don't want to play around in Canva all day long. Well, you're going to want one who has specialized skills in that area. And so those types of VAs, those specialists, clearly outperform somebody who is just available for time and does a lot of different things.
And they really do. And that's one of the main benefits of virtual assistants is finding those very specialized one kind of one jack of all, you know, one person that does one thing versus the jack of all trades. And over time, I realized that people that I worked with, software is very generalist, but over time, it became even more and more specific and more refined towards only one certain thing. Just to give some idea, let's just say I have one or two people dedicated just for Zapier. I have another person who's just dedicated to Google Tag Manager, et cetera, et cetera. And even though it may not be a full-time role, and some of these are, most of these are full-time, but a lot of them are not. But every time I have that problem or that issue, well, I'm able to go to that person. And the good benefit of Upwork is you're not just paying for you to have them on your payroll. They only pay them for the hours that they work. So there are some people that I have that I only tap into them once every couple of weeks, once every couple of months when those issues arise. And, you know, at this point, I've kind of built up that repertoire of all the these virtual assistants that any issues that I run to, I could just run to my Slack or to my Skype and get that sorted out right away. Share access. Hey, can you fix this for me? They fixed it. Great. Thank you so much. I'll be in touch with you for anything that comes up in the future.
Yeah, I think it's a mindset too, Sam, that you have to start thinking about your workflow in discrete, you know, sizable chunks that you can consider having a VA perform. I mean, I think we as attorneys oftentimes think of growing our law firm in terms of bodies of people. And we think, you know, the whole person, which is fine for some roles. But if you start taking a more granular look at your workflow, you'll see opportunities to parse that out to specialists who can do things much more efficiently and be more accountable.
The little calculation that we did earlier, Neil, the $20 an hour of value, it's way more than that, especially if it's a very specialized role. So be mindful, the more specialized the work, the more valuable the work is. And also be mindful of that when you're looking to hire, be okay with paying more, the more specialized it is, versus a generalist VA who only, let's just say, only deals with answering your emails. That's very generalist work. Well, somebody who deals with Google Tag Manager, that's specialized technical knowledge that they need to have. So for that, you know, be open to pay more for those kinds of roles.
Sam, what are your thoughts on having your VAs have direct contact with your clients? I know that's an issue for a lot of attorneys.
It's totally, I highly, highly recommend it. It requires a lot of what we'll be talking about later, which is our SOPs, guidelines, frameworks, and things where basically you want your team to follow your recipe the way that you want to be handled. And some people thrive at it, some people are not. And we'll be discussing these. And I think as we chip away in these secrets, I think it will give you a little clues on how to do that better. And okay. I think the second point, actually, the secret number two will be on this, which is what I call the rule of twos. It's something that I shared inside of our program. There are some things in life that you want to do two at a time. Maybe in a personal, you know, aspect, to, you know, maybe you should always be focused, but there are some aspects such as when you're hiring VAs, when you're creating ads, when you're creating landing pages, when you're creating any kind of creative work. Usually what I like doing is having variety so I could quickly tell what is better. That's one of the benefits of being online, that you're able to quickly test things out. It's kind of like faster iterations, faster way to kind of get a faster feedback loop to know what works, what doesn't, and be able to make adjustments based on that. So with virtual assistants, it's much easier to hire and onboard a VA than it is to hire an in-house employee. In-house employee, you know, again, your market is capped, so it's already hard enough to find people to interview. And then if you find people to interview, then it's hard to find people that are great. If you find somebody, you know, it takes a lot of work and effort to be able to train them and onboard them. And there's also HR issues and considerations to have in mind in the first 90 days, you know, the cause for termination, things like that, you have to be really mindful of. However, when it comes to VAs, you're not dealing with a lot of those issues and liabilities and risks. You're able to quickly hire from a big talent pool, and you're also able to quickly terminate once you know that that person is not the right person for your team. So what I do when it comes to whenever I hire virtual assistants, I always hire two. It's a rule of thumb that I have. And let me quickly bring on two people. Let me give them both work to start. And I'm looking for signs early on. Who's the most responsive? Who's quicker to respond? Who writes better? Who cares more? Who's going to do a better job? Who gets it done quicker? All these little clues add up. And it usually you could tell right away who has those characteristics. And what I found is just my regular mindset is 1 out of 2 is amazing. 1 out of 2 is not. And I'd rather know who that is early on so I can move on with that good person and not be stuck in a situation where I bring somebody on and I'm kind of in the situation where maybe in the first couple of weeks, I have no idea whether they're good or not. 50-50% chance. If it works out, great. If not, you have a 50% chance that it doesn't. And I'll have to spend another another time, continue doing this process again. Well, I'd rather do that, cut that time earlier, do it at the same time concurrently and get that clarity up front. And sometimes, Neil, you may even find yourself 2 amazing VAs, and that's great news. Well, if you're able to create value out of 1, it should be pretty easy to create value out of 2. So I always hire 2 VAs. It works out really well, and I always recommend that as well.
You know, I think right now is the start of the American football season, and to me, this kind of screams for an analogy. You know, in preseason, if you're looking at wide receivers, for example, you're going to bring in more wide receivers than you're going to carry on the team during the season. And you're going to see who performs better. You're going to give them specific tasks and run them through specific drills. This is no different. It is no different. You bring a couple of VAs in during preseason. You give them real work to do. And when it comes time to cut down and identify who's going to be on the team, now you have data to work with.
And this also leads to the little quote that we always say, Neil, date before you marry.
Yep.
And it's also good for the other side too. But there are a lot of these things that I share might come off as one-sided or a little bit ruthless. But if you actually think about it and think deep, it's actually a good thing for the other side too. You don't want somebody who has their hopes up to make this work or make some changes in their life and all of a sudden it doesn't work out. No, you'd rather, both sides would rather have clarity early in the dating stage to know where it's going to go before, unfortunately, before people get married, before people start having kids and, you know, having the commitments down the line. I'd rather have that clarity early on both sides. Let's be happy so that everybody ultimately falls into the right place where they belong.
Yeah, it helps clarify what they're best at going forward. So if they're not going to be a good fit for you, they've got, as you said, more clarity of who they may be a better fit for in the future. So it doesn't you don't have to look at it as like ruthless, cutthroat, approach to staffing. It's really very wise.
Yeah. So, all right, let's go to secret number 3, is that your SOP is your VA's Bible. Neil, what are your thoughts about SOPs?
Yeah, it's funny. When I started my career, 4 careers ago, when I worked at NASA, standard operating procedures were the backbone of how we got to the moon, literally. And so I've always had a soft spot for the importance of creating standard operating procedures. And for a lot of solo practitioners, in the beginning, it's all up here in your head. You don't need to, you choose to spend your time elsewhere and you don't start to put down what the process is for how you get the job done. But if you want to scale at some point, you want to add staff, however you may add staff, you're going to have to document your standard operating procedures. And one of the things I found, just as a side benefit, maybe not a side benefit, but a primary benefit, is when I brought my first VA on board and we went through the onboarding process, what we did was we wrote the procedures at that time as we were doing the onboarding process. And just thinking through how does work get done in my law firm? What are the steps that trigger and what are the events that trigger each step or end each step? That whole analysis, that whole process was so illustrative for me and ultimately for my VA. I don't think you can emphasize how important this is because it's crucial, as you said, to having success with the VA.
Yeah, an SOP acts as the backbone and the foundation of law firm automation. If you're looking to automate and free yourself up from your law firm, fundamental is you need a standard operating procedure to make that possible. In very simple terms, it's just a standard operating procedure is just a set of instructions for everybody in your team to know exactly what to do. And the more clarity that people have about what they need to do, the more likely they are to get the stuff that they need to get done, basically. So, and that's on you as the law firm owner to create this. No one's going to create this for you. And but over time, once you create it, you establish the foundation, then actually your team can step in and add to it and improve it and make it be even better. But
Yeah,
also,
I was made the maintenance of the SOP part of the job responsibility of the employee of the VA. Okay, not only are you responsible for executing this task and performing this function, but you're also responsible for keeping this procedure up to date. So if we change the process, I want the procedure to be updated.
yeah. And a lot of people also struggle with creating one. Well, one is you could start off with a template. And good news is we have the template already made. I made this about 5 or 6 years ago when I created our program. It was one of the things that I give away. It's a law firm standard operating procedure template. You could now find it for free inside a lawyer club. Again, if you go to joinlawyerclub.com, all these resources, everything, we're giving it all away. It's all there. So start off with that. And then second round is you personalize it. And what I did was I simplified it for you. I just put brackets for you to put your law firm name, put your core values there. If you don't know what your core values are, I give you some of my ideas. So you can use those. You fill it up, you do the best you can. And at the very least, you kind of fill out the best version as you can. But for the most part, as Neil shared, this is something that you build on an ongoing basis. You and your team, as your next time you provide instructions for this to be done, well, that needs to be recorded. I have a rule of thumb. Every time you provide instructions, rule of thumb needs to be recorded. So if you're going to be giving instructions live, well, record your Zoom videos. Or what I do is I don't have time to be able to train people live. What I do is I use Loom as a video tool that allows me to record my face, me talking, so people don't get bored of just them looking at a screen. And it also records your screen so you could talk and share exactly when it's to get done. And the mindset is when this happens, you got to do this. And then when this happens, you got to do this. And then keep track of things here. That's usually how the recipe of SOPs are is think when this happens, go do this and keep track of it here. And just keep it simple. Essentially, just a simple Google Doc with written instructions that's ideally linked out to Loom videos. Super simple. Start off there. There are other fancier tools like Monday or Asana, as task managers you can use. There's also a really, really cool one that it's called Scribe AI. That's a really, really cool one that I really haven't got into because for me, I just like keeping it simple. But you could check that out. But yeah, just keep it simple so that it actually gets done.
Yeah, your old adage, done is better than great.
Yep. All right, let's move on to secret number four, is that effective communication is the backbone of remote work. Communication is key for your law firm to be able to perform, for your team to be able to perform to the level that they need to perform. So let's just share the tool that we use for this, Neil. It's Slack. It's basically the best internal communication tool. I know that Microsoft has its own tool. Ultimately, what I found is the tool that you use is the best tool. So if you happen to already be using an internal communication, tool that works for you, great. If you don't have one, then Slack is what I usually suggest. It's free for the first 5 years. I'm using Slack. It's free. Just very recently, in the past year or two, my director insisted be upgrades. I'm like, okay, fine, go for it. I think it's about time to be paid in Slack, you know what they're owed. But what we do is we create Slack channels, which are basically just group chats for each department. That's key, and then also sometimes for each little project. So let's just say we're trying to accomplish integrating our Facebook ads to our to our CRM. Well, one is ideally that should be inside the integration channel. If not, maybe we have a site team that's taking care of that. Well, we create a private Slack channel. We drop everybody there, and then now we communicate everything inside of there. And something I realized After 7-8 years of using Slack, I realized a lot of our team was having a lot of side conversations. There was a lot of DMs, direct messages to each other. Some people were talking to this person was talking to other people, but they weren't. Even though they were working on the same project. So I made a Slack channel announcement. Hey, everybody, from now on, I want all communication to be done via Slack channels. If there's a Slack channel that is not created yet, let me know so I could create that. But let's not have any more side conversations and DMs to get this done, because we want to make sure that everybody's on the same page. So there's no saying, you know, this person said that. Oh, well, I don't know. And then you got to pass it off along and you copy and paste stuff. Instead, keep everything in these Slack channels and it really gets the job done.
And there's tremendous integration opportunities within Slack now as well, which I find very useful. You know, the ability to launch Zoom meetings straight from inside or the channel, or to invite people to a Zoom conference inside your channel, access to your calendar scheduling platform directly from within Slack. So there's a lot of integration that can continually help you automate your functions.
Great point. Great point, Neil. Especially, let's just say, if something critical happens, which for us critical is a client sign up. Well, we want our onboarding team to be notified as soon as it happens, because we need to, it's not just about contacting the lead right away. We also want to contact the client right away as soon as they're signed up to be able to get them onboarded. We collect their documents, etc. So our client onboarding team is notified via Slack notifications, as Neil shared. Which,
yeah, so you have Zapier sending a Slack notification, right?
Correct. Sometimes Zapier is kind of like it's a sure way to integrate anything with anything, but sometimes Slack also has native integrations with the DocuSigns or whatever, or your CRM tools or HubSpot, whatever that is. But yeah, integrations is key so that the right people are notified every time something critical happens, like a new client sign up.
And you know, every time I talk to an attorney who says, VAs didn't work for me, or my VA is not working out for me, when you drill down a little bit, what you find almost always is that they're not really communicating with their VA. You know, they've assigned them a task and then they've said, okay, I've put that out there to the VA and I don't have to worry about this. And they don't have any follow-up communication. There's no tool for them to stay in contact with their VAs. And then they're surprised or disappointed when they don't get the results that they want. I think you're 100% correct here that clear communication and having a standardized communication path is the key to making remote work possible.
Yeah. And usually when it comes to your team's performance, one, again, we mentioned is having clarity on exactly what their role is. And two, if you're having issues, it's usually a tracking issue or a management issue. That means everybody in your team, doesn't matter who it is, needs oversight, needs a manager who oversees what everybody's doing. So manager and tracking, everything that's done needs to be tracked somewhere in a Google Sheet or a Monday or your CRM, you know, so that you have clarity on exactly what has been accomplished that day, that week, that month. If you're missing any of those, you know, you're going to have low performance from your team. All right, so let's go to secret number 5, something critical that a lot of people don't do, which is incentivizing performance to maximize results. It's a pretty hot topic. It's also a very interesting topic because there's some ethical considerations about this one, right? Incentivizing your team. So let me just give a disclaimer. This is not an ethics course. So please consult with your state bar rules and regulations. Talk to an ethics lawyer to make sure it checks out in your state. But here's the things that I've learned when it comes to ethical considerations. Again, number one, consult with an ethics lawyer. That's number one. Number two is avoid specific client intent and incentives. Never attach signing up a specific client to an incentive. Number three, you could look to create team-based bonuses. Try to bonus the entire intake team rather than an individual. And number four, avoid percentages of specific cases. The bonuses should not be based on percentages of specific cases or legal matters. So make sure at least, at the very least, you check those things out. And again, there might be other considerations, but those are kind of my red flags that I always avoid. But however, there are still ways to be able to incentivize your team to perform. The way that I like doing it is, again, this is offered to our, usually to our intake team. And what we do is we create levels of incentives for our team. So let's just say if you sign up an X number of clients, level one, or if you sign up an X number of clients, level two, or X number of clients, level three, then these are the bonuses that you may achieve. So that it's not tied to any specific clients. It's not tied to a thing. It's just based on number of clients that are signed up on a monthly basis that month. This, again, make sure that it checks out with your state bar regulations. But that we found to be critical and being very helpful for us to be able to increase our performance when it comes to our teams.
You know, one of the things that I did, in some cases, just recognizing your VA as being an integral part of your team is sufficient to incentivize them to high performance. So, for instance, as an example, we make sure that all of our VAs, their email address is part of the Tyra law firm. So when they're communicating with clients via email, they're made to feel part of the team. They're not, the client's not seeing some random Gmail or Hotmail address and wondering who this person is. They can immediately recognize that they're a member of the team, and then giving them a title. So, for instance, I have one VA that works primarily with me directly. And so she's identified as my administrative assistant. And for her, that gives her a great sense of belonging and incentivizes her to always be thinking of this as our team. It's not, my law firm and she just works for us. And sometimes that's in and of itself is sufficient to get, high performance from your VAs.
Absolutely. And it's free, right? Recognition and feedback is free and it can be easily done. It makes them feel good. It makes you feel good. It makes everybody feel good. And it's a win-win. So across the board. Neil, what I do is for everybody on our team, we try to have three key components, which is what I call TGI, tracking, goals, and incentives. Everybody is very clear on what needs to get done and that the result of what they do is tracked. Then everybody also has clear goals. Everybody has something to strive towards so that you're not just whimsically doing their job. And the third, ideally, they also have incentives to be able to accomplish their goals. And it's an ongoing kind of game of creating the right incentives and making sure that your team is happy and growing. And yeah, this is what it takes to kind of grow, is to make sure that your team is kind of aligned on your tracking goals and incentives. All right. So quick little recap. We just shared with you five virtual law firm secrets. No, well, not virtual law firm, virtual assistant secrets. Number one is generally specialists will outperform generalists every time. Number two, have in mind the rule of twos. Whenever you're looking to hire VAs, hire in pairs. Number three, make sure you have an SOP that clearly defines exactly what everybody on your team needs to do. You could use a Google Doc and a Loom tool for this. If you need a template, you could join Lawyer Club to be able to get that for free. Number four, use an internal communication tool like Slack. Make sure everybody's there communicating and thriving together. And number five, the importance of incentives. There is a right way to be able to create incentives. Make sure you have an incentive program for your team if you're looking to grow. Neil, we have an amazing next episode where we'll be talking about five reasons why your law firm's intake stinks. It's a clickbaity title, but packed with a lot of value. Look forward to talking about this, discussing that. We appreciate you being here, and we'll see you in the next episode.
Absolutely. Take care.
Thanks for listening to The Law Entrepreneur. If you found value in the show, please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. And don't forget to share the episode with a friend. It could help transform their life. To get access to a treasure trove of exclusive free resources for lawyers, go to joinlawyerclub.com. Again, that's joinlawyerclub.com. We'll see you on the next episode.